In a very clever move on our part, clever if I do say so myself, the church this year decided to abandon Commitment Sunday. Commitment Sunday, the day that strikes fear or dread or loathing or some combination thereof into the hearts of churchgoers everywhere. Over the years, we as a church learned that when publicized in advance, Commitment Sunday had the decided tendency to drive attendance down, and thus also commitments, rather defeating the purpose of the whole thing, I think. So this year, we've decided to soft pedal things a bit, sending all of you a piece of mail or two telling you about our big church and our equally big heart. But that decision has allowed us to continue talking with you about the importance of stewardship and the vitality of your gifts, how very important it is for you to support the life of the church. And then, like manna from heaven, along comes this passage which seems as beautifully tailored for stewardship season as Daniel Craig's suits in the latest James Bond movie. I herewith confess to violating the 10th commandment by coveting 007's wardrobe and his Aston Martin, and as long as we're at it, not a few of the Bond girls. So today, when it's still not too late to make your pledge, and the back of your bulletin helpfully illustrates just how easy it is to increase your monthly giving, the lectionary has us win the lottery. It has us read what is traditionally called the widow's mite. Mite being the way the King James Version translates the two small coins that the widow puts in the alms box. And so today, though it is late in the stewardship season, preachers like me can point to the widow and say, look at this woman, friends. She's given all that she has. Despite her poverty, she is so moved by gratitude toward God that she gives everything that she has out of her poverty. Surely, we preachers say, if this woman can give, you can too. Now, the guilt by comparison rhetorical method can be effective, but it's awfully risky. You don't want people withholding large checks or the end of your stock dividends because you've offended them by suggesting that this widow's tiny little gift is somehow worth more than their $200,000 or maybe $2 million gift. So the other rhetorical strategy that wily preachers like me try is the give till it hurts message, wherein we tell you that your giving doesn't really count until you feel the pinch. It's not enough that you give generously. It's not enough that you tithe, we preachers say. No, we prod, give sacrificially. Dig deep. Don't give just the surplus after your personal expenses have been deducted. Give from the gross, not from the net, we plead. Let it hurt for it to count. Unfortunately for preachers like me, Jesus warns people like you to beware of preachers like me. Dedicated religious professionals who have lost the thread, as the British say. Religious professionals who have become more interested in the perks and benefits of membership in our unique clergy club and the ties that support them, rather than in serving the people and the God God calls us to serve. Clergy types in churches of all stripes, large and small, denominationally affiliated and independent churches, who crave respect and public admiration and money so much that they are willing to devour widows' houses, cheerfully receiving everything widows have been taught to give, perhaps with a promise to pray for them as they do, all so we can keep our jobs and climb the clergy ladder. Well, speaking of widows, Jesus has observed one who was in the line of people waiting to give their offering to the temple. Jesus was in what we call the court of women, that part of the temple in Jerusalem where people were allowed to give their offering. A colonnade ran around the four walls of the court of women, and against those walls were placed 13 chests, all in the shape of trumpets, so they were often called trumpets, which collected the half-shekel temple tax as well as free-will offerings that worshippers wanted to give. These brass trumpets were narrow at the mouth. They were wide at the base. That narrow neck prevented the dishonest from reaching in to help themselves or perhaps make change for 20. I know that temptation has never struck you. You only intended to give a 10, but there's a 20 in your billfold, and you think, oh, criminelli, I've got to offer a 20. Well, because checks and bills hadn't been invented yet, all offerings were coins only. So the more you put into the treasury, the more attention you drew, because all of those large denomination denarii and talents made a lot of noise as they spiraled round the trumpet's narrow neck and into that wide base. And on this particular day, lots of people were making lots of noise. And people like me were enormously pleased. And so the tiny, tinny plink, plink of two small copper coins, each no bigger than the eraser of pencil and not even worth a penny, would have drawn the attention of absolutely no one. No one, that is, except Jesus. When he saw what this widow contributed, he called the disciples over and told them that this widow has put in more than all those others who are contributing to the treasury. And I imagine the disciples wondered, and perhaps you and I wonder, how? How is the widow's mite worth more than the dentist's dollar, or the farmer's five, or the tailor's 10, to say nothing of the merchant's millions? In what sort of new math world has the poor widow given more than everybody else? Mathematically, it doesn't add up. Jesus, for his part, answers that all the others have contributed out of their abundance. Probably didn't even notice the contribution going in, whereas this widow, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on. Well, here is where it's clear that Jesus never had to serve a local church, where Jesus never had to be the minister in charge, where Jesus never had to make a budget or pay the apportionments, never had to cultivate large gifts to keep the doors of the church open and the lights on and the air running. Jesus never had to cultivate friends capable of making those large gifts, because you don't tell your biggest donors that their gifts, frankly, don't stack up against a monetary gift that in the end isn't worth sending a year-end tax statement for. Well, you don't tell people that if you want to keep your job and climb the clergy ladder anyway. So what's the moral? What's the lesson, if there is one, if we can call it that? Is the preacher telling you to go home to liquidate your life's savings? Is the preacher telling you to show up here tomorrow morning to hand over a cashier's check made out to the church? Some people throughout the church's history have heard that call, people like St. Francis of Assisi, and they have responded to the call with wholehearted faith and obedience. And friends, if that is your call, thanks be to God for you and your faith and your gift, Barbara, and I look forward to greeting you in the morning. But the story is frankly about more than money. It's not really a stewardship sermon even. To be honest, if you and I hear the story and feel guilty or ashamed that we've not been able to give more to the church, chances are we haven't heard the story at all. Because what Jesus praises, what Jesus calls for, is not so much the monetary gift, though those are important, though they are necessary. What Jesus praises, rather, is what the widow's gift represents, namely total commitment and absolute surrender to God. Jesus praises this widow because she gave out of her poverty when it didn't make sense to give. When it didn't make sense to part with that kind of cash, when it was foolish, indeed potentially ruinous for her to give that kind of money. I mean, she could have bought bread with those two coins, or maybe some lamp oil, which she would then mark up and resell, make a little profit, maybe have a startup business. Surely in the long run that would mean more gifts for the temple, would it not? But this woman gives when she clearly needs to receive. And Jesus praises this widow because she gave everything she had. She was literally down to her last thin dime, and she plunks it in the offering plate. She didn't hold anything back. She didn't put some aside in reserve. She didn't play one for God, one for me, which she could have done easily with those two small coins. Jesus praises this widow because, in poker terms, she was all in. Only she didn't have a full house. And she didn't have a full house because, with those two small copper coins, the woman gave all she had to live on. This wasn't just her rainy day fund or her going out for a treat, her ice cream money. No, this was her milk and eggs money. This was the rent check. This was the money with which to pay the bills. And it's really not even that, because when you go back to the Greek, it's not that this was all she had to live on. This was her life. She gave her life. And she gave it with no apparent hesitation, no obvious regret, no evident fear for what would happen tomorrow. The story doesn't say that the woman will go home only to find a publisher's clearinghouse waiting for her with an oversized check. Doesn't say that Social Security Administration will realize there's been a mistake and they've been wrongly withheld. The text only says that the widow gave to God as a matter of course, because that is what the children of God do. In simple faith and trust, this widow, out of her poverty, gave everything she had to the work of God. This widow gave sacrificially. She gave till it hurt. Of course, in simple faith and trust, Jesus, too, out of his abundant love and grace and mercy, gave everything he had to the work of God. Jesus gave sacrificially. Jesus gave till it hurt, for us and for our salvation.